You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily. We go to the Ohio Business Machines Hotline now and bring in, from the PNC Bank Cleveland Browns Radio Network, the Browns analyst, Doug Deacon. Doug, thanks for being with us today.
Oh, pleasure.
Doug, obviously over the weekend we learned of the sad news of the passing of Tom DeLeon, who you played with here with the Browns, and I know you wanted to call in and share some thoughts on Tom, your good friend.
Well, I think, you know, Tom was a special guy. He grew up in Kent, went to high school in Kent, and he just really, he kind of exemplifies what this area is all about. He was a blue-collar, hard-working, tough, tenacious guy, and he loved playing for Ohio State, and he loved playing for the Browns, and you know, unfortunately, you know, he was a battler, and he battled a brain tumor about as long as I think you could. And unfortunately, it ended. And, you know, they often refer to our group as the cardiac kids, and Tom was kind of the heartbeat of the cardiac kids.
And Deke, walk us back down memory lane and share one story that probably no one's ever heard unless you've shared it, you know, personally about Tom.
Well, I don't know if there's... Some of those we can't tell, but I think the one that kind of exemplifies Tom is when we were playing the Pittsburgh Steelers and Joe Green was getting a little upset, and Bob McKay was the right guard, and he held Bob McKay down and started kicking him. And at the time, Tom wasn't starting, and all of a sudden, this body comes flying off the bench and puts one on the side of Joe Green's head, and it was Tom DeLeon. And, you know, I always said, if I get in a street fight, this is the guy I want in my corner, because, you know, he is not going to back down, and he is there for as long as you're there.
Sure.
DeLeon was inducted in the Browns Legends Club back in 2011, shortly after his diagnosis, and as you said, he fought it for a very long time. What was that era? Why was that era so special to you guys? And I know you've shared with me on a couple times that you've stayed so close with some of these guys. What was that bond that you guys shared?
Well, I think there was a lot of guys on that team that were you know, people call them overachievers, but I guess, you know, you're either an achiever or you're not. And, you know, you looked at the offensive line. Tom was drafted, I think, in the fifth round by Cincinnati, got cut by a couple teams, ended up starting with us. Robert Jackson was a free agent, had actually went to Duke as a quarterback. He ended up starting for 11 years, and Cody Risen was like a sixth-round draft pick. And Brian Sipe, you know, he was like a 17th-round draft pick. And you just had a bunch of guys that knew that the only way you're going to be successful is if, you know, you played as a team. And I think, you know, on the offensive line, you know, if they were rushing three, two guys were going to be open, and those two guys were looking to help whoever they could. And if they were rushing four, there was always somebody with a head on the swivel to help the other guy out. And, you know, Tom was kind of the general out there. You know, he was the guy who would make the calls, and you know, he just, you know, him and Brian Sipe were, you know, roommates. And, you know, Brian had such trust in Tom and what he did. And, you know, it's amazing the number of guys that have, you know, gone out to see Tom, which just shows you the respect he had from his teammates. And, you know, you can't take any money with you, but you can always take people's respect. And he's got a lot of it.
You absolutely can. And you referenced those some of the guys that went out to see him out in Utah. Do you recall the last instance that you, or time that you spent with Tom, and where was it, when was it, and did you really at all think it might be the last time that you spoke to him?
Well, we kind of knew it was, because, you know, he had the tumor, and then they operated about 3 or 4 years ago and thought they, you know, had some success, but unfortunately it came back, and it came back with vengeance. So, you know, the word got out, and different groups would go out there. I went out with Robert Jackson and Henry Shepard, and, you know, just to, you know, there was such a comfort for Tom, I think, to see the guys, you know, be there and, you know, share stories. And, you know, he could, you know, his memory wasn't what it once was, but, you know, he just had a way of looking at things that just, you know, kind of brought in the reality. And, you know, then I think after that, Shirk and Matt Miller and Cody Risen and Joe D, they went out there, and Brian Sipe was out there, you know, continuously, because he lived in San Diego, and like I said, they were roommates. But, you know, I guess, you know, you mentioned a story about Tom that people never probably heard. I used to be involved with the Special Olympics, so I asked Tom and Robert Jackson 1 year if they'd go over and help me, and so they did. And afterwards, I was thanking them, and before I could get the thank you out of my mouth, Tom goes, what time is it next year? And that's just the kind of guy he was.
Brown center Tom DeLeon passed away this weekend. Talking with Doug Deacon and sharing his thoughts on Tom. Doug, and we certainly appreciate you being with us to talk about your good friend. And I wanted to ask you just to kind of transition into the Browns now this year. Obviously, some news in Berea today. Brian Hartline was released. What did you think about that move? Did it surprise you at all?
Well, I think when you drafted four receivers and then they had a look at them in camp and get an idea of, you know, what kind of skill level they, you know, have, or, you know, how long the transition is going to make it. You know, this team has gone from being one of the oldest and slowest teams to it's become a much younger, obviously, and it's going to be, I think, a faster team.
And, Doug, one thing that I'm sure always has your attention is that offensive line. Have you been able, out of practice last Wednesday, and, of course, you have that opportunity this week again, been in tune to that offensive line and to see if, you know, to the naked eye, has Cam Irving really settled in there at center?
Well, I think you got to put pads on and play for real before you find out, because, you know, everybody looks good in 7-on-7 drill. But, you know, when you put the pads on, I think that's when you find out. And, you know, obviously, he's addressed it. He says he's addressed it, and we'll find out in a few months.
We will. And one of the other questions for the Browns is at the right tackle position. And you look at that right tackle, Alvin Bailey's there. You draft Sean Coleman, Spencer Drango, a lot of guys, Austin Pastore also in competition over there. How important is that position, and what would you want ideally out of the right tackle spot?
Well, I think, you know, you want dependability and durability, and you want somebody that you know that can, you know, block one-on-one if it's necessary. And, yeah, there's some guys that sometime you might need a chip or a tight end stay on your side. But I think, you know, the other part of it is, you know, you want somebody who can knock people off the ball. You know, I thought Mitchell Schwartz did a great job in the years that he was here, and he was very durable. He wasn't one of those road grader type right tackles like, you know, a lot of teams have, but you know, it looks like they're going to go in a direction of more of a road grader, you know, type of guy that, you know, if you need that 1 yard, you're going to run behind.
Doug, we appreciate the time very much. Thanks for being with us. We look forward to seeing you out here on Wednesday when the Browns continue week number two of their OTA program.
Okay, guys.
Thank you.
All right. Doug Deacon, our guest there on the Ohio Business Machines Hotline, sharing some memories of Tom DeLeon, the Browns center who passed away over the weekend, a member of the Cardiac Kids, a two-time Pro Bowler, made back-to-back Pro Bowl trips in 1979 and 80, one of three Browns centers in the history of this franchise to earn multiple Pro Bowl honors, the others being Alex Mack and John Morrow. And DeLeon, as I noted, in 2011, was inducted into the Browns Legends Club. Sam Ratigliano, the coach, saying of DeLeon, quote, he was a unique person and had this indefinable quality about him. He's not a guy that would have been favored by analytics. It was all intangibles with Tom. So Browns, again, as I said, articles, videos on the career and life and times of Tom DeLeon, Browns two-time Pro Bowl center who passed away at the age of 65 over the weekend. When we come back, we'll open up our phone lines again, 216-578-0850. Again, 216-578-0850. Zagura Wilhelm and Gibbs here on CBD.
You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily. Nathan Zagura, Matt Wilhelm, Jason Gibbs. Brian Hartline released by the Browns today, which means more opportunity for the rookies they drafted. Rashard Higgins, Ricardo Lewis, Jordan Payton. I caught up with Jordan Payton last week. Talk about his drafting coming to the Browns and his expectations for 2016.
You know, it's an amazing thing, man. It's an unbelievable opportunity for me. That call has changed my whole life. You know, it's just my family's excited. I'm excited. I'm so blessed to be here. So it's a huge blessing to be drafted by this amazing, you know, historical program. And I can't wait to, you know, work and get after it.
When you come to a team that is as badly in need of receivers as the Browns have been for a few years now, they draft four of them. What was kind of your reaction to that?
You know, it's an amazing time to be, you know, be here in Cleveland, because, you know, we did bring in, you know, four great receivers, and you know, these guys all around me, we're just eager and we're ready to get after it and to compete. And with this competition, it brings out the best, you know, brings out the best in everybody. So it's an amazing time, like I said. You know, I know the four of us, we've been, you know, together for 24 hours now. We're ready. We're eager to get after it. We're ready to just, you know, make this a huge turnaround and bring wins to this city.
What's it like to come here and know you're going to get to play for Hugh Jackson?
You know, I was just talking about that earlier. It's a dream come true, man. It really is. You know, I grew up watching TJ and being close to TJ and Chad and seeing what they did at Cincinnati and wanting to be that. So, you know, it's I can't even express to you. It's an amazing thing. And, you know, now it's up to me to take advantage of all the opportunities. And that's what I'm willing to do and that's what I'm eager to do. So every day is a work day. Show up, you know, get the work done and be here and compete and bring wins to Cleveland.
How wild is it to think about all the receivers that are coming out of UCLA and you're the all-time leader in receptions at that school?
It's a blessing, like I said. It's something that, you know, you train every day and you work, you know, you worked your whole life and to be able to have that is an opportunity. Now you bring it here and you bring everything you've done and you take it up a notch and you bring that to Cleveland.
What's it been like since you got here? Kind of walk us through the first day. I know you're eager to get out on the field later today, but what's it been like kind of getting here?
You know, it feels amazing to get back on the field, you know, to get back on, you know, I've been out in Cali and been just, you know, running routes, but now nothing like this with a team setting and in the organization and in the facilities and with the Browns gear on. And it was amazing. You know, I touched down, I took a red eye, so got in. And the first thing I said, well, I'm in Cleveland, man. It's unbelievable. So I'm excited. We're eager. And we can't wait to turn this around and get wins to Cleveland.
What are you looking forward to accomplishing the most here in minicamp?
Development, you know, learning the system, getting it down. You're not going to learn it all in, you know, 3 days, but just continuing to build, get to know the guys, get to know the place, get familiar with everything so you can, you know, be successful.
One of my favorite guys in the building is Al Saunders. Have you gotten a chance to talk to him?
Coach Saunders is an unbelievable guy, a legend. You know, the first thing he said to me on the phone when they drafted me was, you know, I was fortunate enough to give my coach, Coach Mora, his first job, so now I get to give you yours. So with that, I'm extremely grateful, and I'm going to show up every day and work and prove that, you know, he drafted the right guy.
What's one thing you'd want the Dog Pound to know about you?
I love the city already.
Jordan Payton there, the all-time leading receiver in UCLA history, loves Cleveland already. He's ready to go. And unfortunately for him, I think it's tough for him that he has – you know, it's great that he's graduating. And again, I'm not disparaging that. I think that he should do it. But I think it's tough. And Danny Shelton went through this last year. For the guys in those Pac-12 schools, it can be difficult. And that puts him behind a guy like Hollywood Higgins, who's had the opportunity to be here.
It definitely does. I think in the eye of the head coach, but seeing what I've seen on the football field, I can't necessarily believe that Higgins and Payton are going to be running the same routes, because I think they're different players with different skill sets. And I think that if Jordan Payton truly understands and is working on his craft now, being a professional as well as being a student, you know, out there on the West Coast, if he is working as hard at his profession as he is to finish his degree, he will come back in shape. He'll come back with a great understanding of this playbook, and then very quickly has to take all that he's learned and been perfecting, you know, in understanding that playbook, and see it on the field. He's not going to have a lot of time to prove it. So we're going to have to see a lot. And I want to see the production. I want to see the, you know, the savvy that he has and the role that I think he can play.
I want to see. I like the big physicality. He's a guy who I think will show better in pads than he shows necessarily in shorts. But I want to see him out there, the physicality, and see what he can bring to the table. And Gibbs, for you right now, we've talked about it. Wilhelm is a Payton man. I like Higgins. Of these young guys, who do you like to come in? I like Payton too, and I know you like Higgins as well, but I'm saying that's just the skill set that you see meshing in right away. What do you think of these young rookies, and what are you hoping to see from them on Wednesday? And obviously, I don't think we'll get to see Payton, but what are you looking to see on Wednesday?
Well, I'm excited to see Coleman out there, you know, because last week we didn't get a chance to see him because they were at the rookie premiere. So we didn't see him, we didn't see Ricardo Lewis, and we didn't see Kessler. So I'm fired up on Wednesday to see what Coleman can do against a couple of those veteran DBs that'll be there. And, you know, I mean, in the wide receiver room, I've said it before, I think Payton is definitely a dark horse. I think Payton could be the guy that really turns some heads by the time it's all said and done. But, I mean – right now you're on pace. I mean, do you start three rookies on opening day in Philadelphia? That's totally on the table and possible right now.
It is. It really is. And I can't say
kind of
that
exciting.
If I'm a both short-term and long-term Browns fan, I can't say that I'd be against it.
No.
Because can anyone else walk up to me and, you know, step on the podium and legitimize what they've accomplished in a Browns uniform to the point where they have to be a starter on this football team?
No.
No.
Not yet.
No.
No.
So
that's why it's going to be so interesting.
And I think that what we also have to, you know, Hugh Jackson's been a huge topic of conversation is you not only have to pass the eye test to be a part of the offense for Hugh Jackson, but you have to sell yourself every day to Hugh Jackson to be a starter in his offense. And if you line up in his offense on day one as a starter or as a contributor, you've obviously passed a test. And I like that.
You've got to pass tests, and then you've got to, I would imagine, continue to pass that
test
every Sunday.
That's what I mean. But I mean, to be, if we go three rookies or four rookies, whatever it is, you know, week one in Philly, those guys have had to have done enough to sell it to Hugh Jackson. They can actually play in this league. Otherwise, the wheels are going to, you know, the turnstile will continue here in Cleveland at wide receiver. The core will stay the same, but you're going to find guys. You're going to scour all ends of the earth. Hugh could probably go to Sasha and go, hey, give me more. I need another guy. I need more guys. I need a guy that can do this.
And
we're going to do it until we find it.
Sure. And we brought in another one over the weekend,
correct,
as we noted,
yeah,
from Rice.
That's my – you guys were talking about it a few minutes ago. It is going to be very interesting to see how many of these wide receivers are on this opening day roster. You know, who's going to the practice squad? If you're going to the practice squad, if you're one of those four rookies that's going to the practice squad, how are you going to get through to the practice squad and not get picked up by someone else?
So right now, this is what we've got. We've got Coleman, Gabriel, Ronnell Hall, Hawkins, Higgins, Jennings, Moore, Dennis Parks, who was signed over the weekend, Jordan Payton, Terrell Pryor. That's 10 guys right now in that room competing for maybe six spots. Of course, there's also the wild card. Oh, Ricardo Lewis as well. So that's 11 guys. The wild card remains with, you know, does Josh Gordon come back? Not counting on it. A lot of people were tweeting me, do you think the release of Brian Hartline means good news on Josh Gordon? I don't think it is related in any way,
no,
shape, or form.
But right, didn't they say you wouldn't have a determination from the league until at least August?
Until August is when he can apparently try again, yes. So Coleman, of the guys that I think are locks to make this team, I think the list is one long. Corey Coleman.
Agreed.
As an absolute lock, I think it's a good chance that you'll get all four of the rookies, three of the four, but really, the only guy that you can say right now for sure will be a Cleveland Brown this year, I think, is Corey Coleman. I think you want to be able to say that about Ricardo Lewis, Payton, and Higgins, but I think the only one that you can make that case for sure is going to be Corey Coleman. I think the guys will, but so there's a lot of competition. If you look at it that way, and we have 11 guys on the roster, and we think there could be six wide receivers, Coleman is a lock. That leaves 5 out of 10. 50% of the remaining guys that are here.
Yeah.
And of the guys, though, that have practice squad eligibility, you've got Ronnell Hall, Higgins, Jennings, Moore, Parks, Payton, and Ricardo Lewis. But I don't know that you expose those guys. So it's going to be those are going to be some interesting decisions. And I thought all along Brian Hartline was going to be an odd man out. I mean, I've said that since day one.
Yep.
I didn't know it was going to happen this quickly. But again, to your point, Matt, you can only get so many reps. There are only so many team period reps available, and you want to find out who these guys are as quickly as possible.
Yes.
So you need them to get those reps.
I agree.
G.I. George tweets at the show, is it safe to say that the Browns rookie wide receivers have a higher ceiling than any vet wide receiver on the roster, save Pryor?
Well, yeah, especially by the time you get to, you know, let's call it 2018. Which is, you know, kind of the time frame, 2016, start to see the positive direction first year. Next year you add even more talent. You're very competitive. 2018 maybe is the breakthrough year. Could happen earlier than that. But, yeah, I think you're absolutely assessing, where am I going to be? Brian Hartline in 2018 is going to be 31 years old. Is he going to be any better than what, you know, the Browns are getting from Rashard Higgins in year three or Jordan Payton in year three or Ricardo Lewis? No way.
I can't say so. No.
No way. So I from that standpoint, I think it's pretty easy. I think it's a pretty easy one there. Browns on the hot seat. The guys that have a lot to prove. 216-578-0850. It certainly seems to me that there's consensus on RG3 and Hayden. I've also seen a lot of Barkevious Mingo.
Yes.
And as I've said, I think it's an experiment. Where's he going to be this year? Would you be surprised if you see him lining up sometimes inside as well as outside, or is he strictly outside in your mind?
Strictly outside in my mind.
Yeah, I think he has to be.
Yeah, I just think, I mean, the mentality of a line, when you're playing inside, you know you have to be able, the play can either go right or it can go left or it can come right at you. When you're lined up on one side, you know, there are techniques, either a defensive end or this is standing up as an outside linebacker. That, I mean, the ball is coming to you or it's going away from you. And I think the perspective that, you know, Barkevious Mingo has had in college as a defensive end to then play a stand-up linebacker, there's a transition there that I think Emmanuel Ogbah is going to have that same transition from handing his hand on the ground to, you know, standing up in that two-point stance to truly take on the characteristics of an outside linebacker in a 3-4 defense. Mingo struggled with that, you know, especially from a pass rushing standpoint, but really got it as a dropper, which we know. But from where he was drafted, there's not enough production for him to come about. And then if he just can't move inside. You love the gangly, rangy, you know, athlete that he is. But I feel like we're going backwards. Then we've got this guy. He's a specialty down player. And this is going to be a 3-4 defense or it's going to be a 4-3 defense in nickel and dime. Right. No specialty packages. Because he hasn't done it. He hasn't shown me enough to deserve the right to be on the football field to make that significant of an impact.
And that outside linebacker room is very interesting. You've got Paul Kruger. You've got Emmanuel Ogbah, who I would say is a lock to make this football team. You've got Barkevious Mingo. You've got Nate Orchard, who I would also say is a lock to make this football team. You've got Armani Bryant. You've got Joe Schobert. Now they're saying he can go in and out. Scooby Wright thus far has been working inside but played outside in college. There's only going to be probably four of those guys. Now, Armani Bryant is suspended for the first four games of the year, so you can keep him, and you don't have to make a decision on him relative to the 53 for 4 weeks because you just put him on the suspended list and he doesn't come against your 53. So really it's going to come down to, is there a way for Mingo, Kruger, Ogbah, Orchard, and Schobert, if you're counting them as outside, to all make this team five outside backers? I'd say probably not.
I don't know. To me personally, I just know that the way that a suspension weighs on the mind of a head coach and a general manager in constructing your 53, it's a hindrance. Because you don't want to keep a guy only for 4 weeks to bring back a guy that's only going to be most likely a partial down player for you. You know? And is that partial down player for you that much better than the guy you have to get rid of?
Right.
You know? And I just think this is a different mentality. We know Mike Pettine carried a lot of corners. I would imagine offensive head coach probably going to carry more, you know, running backs, tight ends, wide receivers, you know, gadgets, toys in his tool bag.
Yep.
Whereas, you know, Ray's going to go, you got 24 spots. Take your 24. Go. Get me my best players. The flexibility is going to come on offense. It's not going to come on defense anymore.
Yeah, I think the days of it being, you know, 23, 27, and 3 are probably over. It's
they
probably going to be more balanced and maybe perhaps skew even a little bit to the offensive side. But with special teams, that's where you sometimes can get that balance or that tilt to the defensive side of the ball. All right, 216-578-0850 is the way to call us up here on CBD. The Browns returning to work tomorrow for week number 2 of their OTAs. Practices 4, 5, and 6 happen Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday of the 9 OTA sessions. Brian Hartline will not be there, released by the Browns today. 216-578-0850 on CBD.
You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily. Nathan Zagura, Matt Wilhelm, Jason Gibbs. Gibbs, come on in. It's time for a little after for the review.
Number 1.
All right, guys, from the weekend that was, let's start off with a little groin kick Should Draymond Green be suspended after his little soccer-esque kick yesterday in the Golden State Warriors' loss to Oklahoma?
I'm going
to
say yes. And the reason why I say yes, this is no bias against the Warriors because of last year. I just think professional athletes, and especially from an NBA standpoint, they're held accountable to their body and their space. And you know, just like LeBron, you know, getting flailing back after getting hit in the face by Tristan's arm.
That was hilarious.
You know, there's such an awareness, and I think you know what you're doing, that I thought it was intentional, and it should be a one-game suspension.
I mean, you can make the case that he was kind of doing the step back a la Dirk Nowitzki, and then that caused him
Has
to,
Dirk
know,
ever kicked anyone in the nuts?
No.
No.
I think it was completely intentional. I think he will be suspended and probably should be.
Yeah, and I'll be the first one to say, I want to play Golden State. This has nothing to do with, well, you know, we want Golden State to lose, so we get Oklahoma City. I'd rather play Golden State. You want to be the best, you got to beat the best.
I'm not sure right now the best is not.
Yeah, you can make the case right now. The hottest team in the league would be the Oklahoma City.
What are they? They're 6-8 against the Warriors and Spurs. 6-2. I'm sorry, in the last 8 games against the Warriors and Spurs.
It's pretty darn good.
They have the highest percentage to win the championship right now, 37%. So
is that from 5:30 ESPN?
It is from ESPN. Yes.
Interesting. Interesting.
Yes.
Number two.
Question number two, biggest reason for the Cavs losing Saturday, the Raptors playing well or the Cavs playing poorly?
I think it's a combination of both. I wish I could say it's one way or the other. I thought the Raptors in that basketball game hit a hell of a lot more shots than they hit in the first two games. And then I believe I'm not going to put it so much on the Cavs. I'm going to put it on three people. And I know one has taken some responsibility. I'm going to put it on Ty Lue. LeBron, in some cases, was unstoppable with his ability to get to the rack. And when they ran a play for him, he got the shot that you wanted. Then I'm going to put it on the other big two. I'm going to put it on Kyrie and Kevin Love. Love was off, so I'll even discount him a little bit. I thought Kyrie played like crap. I thought there were times that he was unabated to the hoop, and he settled for a pull-up jumper or a three-pointer or a 21-footer instead of going to the rack, getting fouled, slowing the game down, and going to the free throw line and shooting two free throws, which, you know, he shoots over 90%, so I'll take that all day.
Yeah, I think at the end of the day, it was a combination of both, as you said. I think if the Cavs play their best basketball, though, it doesn't matter how good the Raptors play, they're not losing.
I agree with that.
So I think that it's more on the Cavs than the Raptors. But it just goes to show, you're not going to be able to shoot from three like they've been shooting from three of late. That percentage is just not going to hold up.
You live by the three, you die by the three.
And they had a little bit of an off shooting game. I mean, Kevin Love was 1-for-4, LeBron 1-for-5, Irving 1-for-7. So your big three were a combined 3-for-16. JR was 6-of-15 from three. And, you know, you still felt like he had a good game, but the three-point shooting, other than Channing Frye, was suspect in that game. You didn't get enough ball movement, only 15 assists on your 28 made field goals, which they had been doing a better job of. I just think overall, and Toronto, look, I think it's a tough place to play.
And I'll be honest, Biombo, I'm not worried. I mean, he thinks he's some intimidating, you know, force. He's not. Okay, he can't score the basketball. I'll take Tristan all day over him. But Tristan needs to step his game up because Biombo's 20-plus rebounds killed us. Because if JR...
20 rebounds in the third quarter.
JR and Love and LeBron, if we're going to shoot that low percentage of three-pointers, we bank on getting some of those 50-50 balls that we end up getting an easy basket on. Or, you know, you get another three-pointer and you're going to play the odds that you're going to hit the next one. Well, Biombo or whoever else, they were winning the 50-50 balls and Biombo's getting every miss.
And
give us second chance points.
And I read a stat that we had at least 22 points inside the paint in every half of the first two games, and we had, I think, 23 points inside the paint for the whole game three.
Yeah.
And Toronto's looks like they're going to get Valanciunas back tonight.
Fine.
I don't care.
I also think that was the first time we scored under, like, 100 points in the series or the playoffs
84.
Or something.
Yeah, 84 points. Good defensive job by them and an off night for the Cavs.
All right, so how concerned are you guys going into game number four? Is this going to be over in five games, or are we going longer?
I think it's over in five games.
Yeah.
This game to me is huge, though. How do they respond from that performance?
Sure.
Do they start to question themselves, or do they come at
forward?
If
they start to question themselves, they're not fit to be the champion. I'll say that right now. Regardless of whether the Warriors or the Thunder, it's if they question themselves in game four against the Raptors, a team that they beat by 20-plus points twice at home, if they question themselves after one little blip of adversity, they're not fit to be a champion. And LeBron's not the leader we thought he was.
Yeah.
Strong take. It's a hot take.
It's true.
Hot.
Number three.
Question number three. It just won't go away. How does Tom Brady v. Roger Goodell end?
I mean, it should end with Brady winning, but I don't know if it will.
I think that Tom Brady will start the season again because the appeals will just at one point, Tom Brady will serve a four-game suspension. I can't say that it's this year.
When would it be?
Sounds like if he goes through this appeal process, it won't be until the following season. And by that point, he could win a Super Bowl and retire. I mean, he's not a spring chicken.
It just blows my mind that Goodell just won't give this up. I mean, you took the pick from them
already.
Yeah, we had people calling, you know, days before the draft that New England should get their pick back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and Kraft, chalk up the $1 million, you know. You get your pick, keep the million. Now, that's splitting it right down the middle. And then, you know, Tom Brady's handling things on his own.
As Tony Grossi said this morning, I just find it hard. I mean, there's only so many appeal levels you can go up to. Like, are you really going to – the Supreme Court's not going to hear this case. It's not going to get that far. So, I mean, how many more appeals chances are you going to get if you're Tom Brady? And it's ridiculous. He shouldn't be fighting this at all anymore, but it just blows my mind that this is back in the news.
It is rather astounding. It is rather. I just want it to go away and let's just get on with it, get over with it, be done.
Yep,
that's what I'm looking for.
Number four.
All right, guys. Final question as we do after further review the weekend edition. Sports Illustrated releasing their most fit athlete rankings. LeBron James is the world's number two most fit athlete. USA decathlete Ashton Eaton is first. Usain Bolt is fifth. Who is the most fit player on the Browns, in your opinion? And maybe who's the most fit player in the National Football League?
Huh. Good question.
Most fit player on the Browns?
Well, most fit, I would say, I mean, Ricardo Lewis could be most fit. Right?
Seth DeVolve looks pretty fit. Me.
Seth DeVolve looks very fit.
He looks pretty fit.
How about, okay, there's our rookies.
Taylor Gabriel always looks very fit.
Yes, he does. Andrew Hawkins is always fit.
Gabriel is always seems to be a very fit man.
Yeah.
He's our NFL player. I mean, there should be a lot of guys that are, you should be able to go through pretty much the whole team that's not offensive linemen and say these guys are as fit as a human being can be.
True.
It's their job. Was the last one, who is the most fit player in the NFL?
Yeah, who do you think the most fit player is in the NFL?
On the planet, I'm going to say Russell Westbrook right now.
Let's see. Who was the number one? He came in at number seven.
Russ?
Yeah.
Who was first? Like some soccer players?
Number one was that decathlete.
Okay.
Number two was LeBron. Number three was Ben Smith, the CrossFit Games. Okay. That guy's insane. Yeah. I've seen that before.
Yeah, okay.
They're freaks.
John Jones, UFC, is number four.
Yeah.
Usain Bolt, number five. Cristiano Ronaldo, number six.
Okay.
Russell Westbrook, seventh. Jordan Burroughs from USA Wrestling is number eight.
Who makes it from the NFL?
Novak Djokovic is nine. Some pole vaulters, number 10. Jeez, we got to find J.J. Watt at 13.
I know J.J. Watt's fit, but he wouldn't be the first.
Yeah, Cam Chancellor was 14.
I would have said back in the day, Terrell Owens.
Yeah. Yeah.
He was a beast.
Yeah. Vernon Davis is 20.
Vernon Davis.
Yeah, he's fit. He's like a 5%er. So is T.O.
You know who they always said here with the Browns, who was always, that I remember them saying last year, was always ridiculous, body fat, everything, was Ibrahim Campbell.
Yeah.
Was off the charts last year.
Yeah, we talked to him about that, didn't we?
Yeah.
I felt like Dez Bryant was 28th.
Okay.
Let's see other NFL guys. Cam Newton at 32. You got a NASCAR driver in here? Get out.
Who?
Scott Dixon.
Come on.
I don't even know.
He's an IndyCar guy. Sorry, not a NASCAR.
Okay.
Odell Beckham Jr. at 34. Russell Wilson at 36.
Oh, come on.
Gross.
Chris Hogan at 38.
Chris Hogan, the guy that was always 7-11 from the Miami Hard Knocks.
Connor Barwin, 43 from Philly.
All right, this list bores me.
Gronkowski at 46. Those are your NFL players.
Gronk should be better than that.
I would think.
How important, like, from your experience though in the NFL, like, yeah, Glenn Winston's a guy here that's ridiculously fit.
He is fit.
He's ridiculous. Yeah. But how much of a correlation is there between that, I mean, and success on the field?
Some. Not all.
I mean, Gilbert, I would think, of just from a pure athletic standpoint, is probably near the top of the list for the Browns every year since he's been here.
Correct.
Interesting. Interesting. Bob in Millersburg says Jay Cutler would make the list if it wasn't for all that smoking.
Nicotine.
That's good. That's right. All right, we'll be back wrapping up this Monday. The Browns return to work tomorrow. We can't wait for that as they take the field for OTA session number 4 here on CBD.
You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back. Wrapping it up here on this edition of CBD. Obviously, Cavs playoff basketball tonight. Any doubts? I don't know if Gibbs, I don't know if I want you to make such a strong statement like you made about the Thunder, but are there any doubts in your mind that the Cavs get the win tonight?
Yeah, there's doubts.
There are doubts.
After what happened on Saturday, I think, personally, to answer that last question in the segment, I thought the Cavs just didn't play well. At least that's what I'm hoping is the case. You know, Toronto made some shots. They got a little home cooking. That'll happen. The Cavs should bounce back, and they should win this game. They're clearly the better team. But if you leave the door open for these guys tonight, and they get back in this, and we're tied at 2, that takes on a whole new this series. Then I really start getting a little nervous. I don't know. I don't know.
I think tonight at home you squish the bug.
If you beat
the Raptors.
You beat them tonight, then it's over. Because then you only have to win one more.
They're not winning at home. They're not winning in Cleveland.
No.
So you do it tonight, it's over.
Yep. Wrap it up and take care of your business. Just go out there and stomp on the throat.
Because you just don't want to get yourself into any type of situation where it could go unnecessarily back to game 6. And then they win that, and then all of a sudden it's just a win-or-go-home situation.
And you think, you look, if they win Wednesday at home, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, they'd have 7 days off and play on the 8th day when the NBA Finals would kick off on June 2nd.
Yeah, which is good.
Which is great. And, I mean, it looks like –
I'm all for that. I get my
– and everything – I mean – and I know that we're now a day ahead of the Western Conference Finals, but I think that's going to be the dogfight. There's a bully in the East. It's the Cavaliers. I think the West is going to go back and forth. It's going to go 6 at minimum.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I would fully expect Golden State to win.
You know, they're going
to
play.
What if they don't?
One.
My mind will be blown like it was this morning when I woke up.
It'd be a minimum of 20. So then again, they're going to play. The Saturday would be the sixth game of the series. The 28th is a Saturday. 1, 2, 3. Then they'd have 4. They'd have half the rest the Cavaliers would have in preparations for the finals.
Yeah. It would be interesting to see where the game is played.
Correct.
Depending on the outcome of the Western Conference. I think they win as well. I think that they settle down, get into the paint again, establish their physical dominance over a team. They're just better than. I mean, they're just better. They're the top 3 players on the floor at any given time. They're just better than the Raptors.
Yeah.
Raptors compete, showed a heck of a lot of heart, by the way, in that game. Cool place to play, too. I haven't watched many games in Toronto. That was actually – I like the floor was cool color, the red. But time to set – enough. Playtime is over. Time to take care of business. Do what you do. You get the best player in the world. Go ahead. Give it to him. Let's go.
Yeah. I'm all about the Cavs coming out tonight and punching some people in the mouth.
Right. I'm ready for – I don't know if anybody else is, but I'm ready for a angry LeBron, like, 40-point night. Like, get selfish, LeBron. I love – triple doubles are great. I love, 8 dimes, 7 boards, and, 26 points, and Kyrie goes for 24, love for 21.
I'm ready for an angry 40 point, like 11 of 13 from the free throw line, you know, 3 of 6 from 3-point, and sure, and living in the paint beyond sure that.
Yes, we all will.
I'm ready for that.
You can only anger the man so many times. And I'm like, you know, you just keep pushing his buttons. At some point, angry LeBron comes to play, and that's when you're all in big trouble.
And I am waiting. I will get the poster, and I'll put it on my master bedroom wall of LeBron posterizing Biombo at one point in this series. Because I'm over him already.
You're done with him.
I'm done with him.
26 boards. Get out of here.
Go back to Congo.
All right, they'll be breaking down the game for you next here on ESPN 850. The Golden Boys up next. Obviously, tomorrow the Browns return to work, and if you missed it, the big news of the day, the Browns come to terms on the release of veteran wide receiver Brian Hartline, who played one season here for the Cleveland Browns, signed last year, and this year will be looking to play elsewhere in the NFL. Browns drafting four receivers in the 2016 draft, so those guys going to have certainly every opportunity to compete and earn playing time right out of the gate. And we'll see that competition begin tomorrow here in Berea. For Matt Wilhelm and Jason Gibbs, I'm Nate Skirb. Got to thank Doug Deacon also for calling up, and want to thank you for listening to another edition of Cleveland Browns Daily
on ESPN 850 WKNR.
You've been listening to Cleveland Browns Daily, a production of the Cleveland Browns and ESPN 850 WKNR.